Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of the region this Tuesday, October 8, 2024. South Sudan's new spy chief vows to fight corruption from within.
I will commit and consult with the President of the Republic of South Sudan for the information to be effective.
And one young man leads a group in Bor to do good by turning trash into something useful.
We came up with recycling technology. How are we going to achieve such kind of a vision? We can achieve such kind of a vision by turning plastic waste into food eco-friendly bricks, reduce the burden of plastic that are filling our land.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The new chief of the South Sudan Internal Security Bureau says he will work to end corruption within the spy agency. General Akech Tong Alu spoke in Juba during a ceremony attended by the Police Inspector General of Police, the Commander of the Defense Forces, the Minister of Interior, the Presidential Security Advisor, and the Minister of National Security. For VOA News, Dennis Lagonier reports from Juba.
General Akech Tong Alu was welcomed at the National Security Office, known as Blue House, with relations on Tuesday. Senior officials of the service converged to witness him take office as the new Director General of the Internal Security Bureau. Akech Tong Alu, who has been serving as an Undersecretary of Veteran Affairs in the South Sudan Defense Forces, or SSPDF, says his immediate task will be to fight corruption within the spy agency.
I will commit and consult with the President of the Republic of South Sudan for the information to be effective. I am humble and take on this leadership role to integrate my potential of what we are achieving together. Let us dwell upon the legacy of those who are come before us, working together to protect our nation and its value.
Lul Hawk lives in Juba Town. He says he is concerned about the recent security bill the National Assembly passed, which gives powers to the National Security Force to detain individuals without an arrest warrant. He says the new director should safeguard security and allow freedom of expression and gatherings across the country.
Freedom of speech and freedom of having groups around should be a right, you know, not a privilege. Let them allow South Sudanese to exercise their freedom. They need to have a political space where they can share different ideas, different ideologies, so that our country can prosper. We need a country that is democratic, that is based on human rights, respect on human rights and rights of others.
Minister of Interior Angelina Teng advises the new director of the Internal Security to build a good system that works with other security organs.
This is the concern of the authority that assigns you. So we leave that worry to the president, because he's the one who's going to appoint the next DG. We leave that worry to the DG who will be deploying people. But while you're in that position, whether you're there for 24 hours or 2 years, every day just wake up and doing the right thing by your job and by your people.
General Isaac Obuto Mamur is South Sudan's National Security Minister. He says the new director should work to protect the country, its citizens, and their property.
Let us not involve into politics. Our mission as national security are controlled by three circumstances. We must not look inward. We must look outward to see our map of South Sudan of 1947, how we can bring it back to our land. That is number one in all our strategic missions. Number two, we must protect all South Sudanese, regardless of so-called tribal or color or gender. We must treat them equally. They are all South Sudanese.
Last week, President Kiir removed General Akol Kurkuch from the post of ISB Director General and appointed Akech Tong Alew his replacement. Kiir then named Akol Kur his longtime Kiir confidant, who served for nearly 13 years to become governor of Warap State. Akol Kur has been out of the country and is expected to be in Juba Wednesday to assume his gubernatorial role. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Lagonier reporting from Juba.
Some Young men in Jonglei State's capital, Bor, say they are reducing plastic pollution and turning out a usable building material at the same time. The group takes used plastic bottles, bags, and broken chairs and makes them into bricks for constructing houses. Some residents of Bor Town say the plastic bricks can withstand floods and other harsh weather conditions. For VOA News, Mamar Abraham Kwat has the story for VOA from Molokaw.
24-year-old Joel David Quer, founder of the nonprofit Sanitation Solution Youth Initiative, and a Bor resident, says he mobilized other young men to help fight plastic pollution in the area. Joel says his group uses gum arabic to turn plastic bottles, broken chairs, and polythene bags into what he calls eco-friendly bricks.
I decided to come up with a community-based organization called Sanitation Solution Youth Initiative Organization. And the reason that's why we came up with such a community-based organization is to help our community and change our community positively. We came up with the recycling technology. How are we going to achieve such kind of a vision? We can achieve such kind of a vision by turning plastic waste into two eco-friendly bricks, reduce the burden of plastic that are filling our land.
Quer says he was forced by financial challenges to relocate his nonprofit operation from Juba to Bor Town.
By the time we're doing it in Juba, I've been doing it to start up the large-scale production. Unfortunately, because of lack of funding and some other financial problems, I couldn't make it. That's why I had to come to Bor, because these bricks are favorable in this situation in Bor. I wish any of our brothers or any of our leaders, I wish they visit Rwanda and in DC. What is that making Rwanda clean that cannot make South Sudan clean?
Some residents of Jonglei State, capital Bor, recommend using the bricks in areas frequently affected by the floods. Warabek John says he uses the bricks, which absorb water in his compound and then dry when the sun shines.
That's so nice. And this thing goes back to this climate change and global warming. Well, the way I've been using them, I put them to absorb water in the compound. That's so economical. I'm interested on this way to absorb water. To me, I think it's so recommended to people. I can recommend to people to look at it seriously.
Aleka Jack, a lecturer at University of Juba, says plastic pollution is a big problem in South Sudan. She says plastic waste has blocked the flow of rivers across the country. Ajak says the Sanitation Solution Youth Initiative could help eradicate the problem of environmental degradation across South Sudan.
Plastic pollution is a big problem in South Sudan. Yeah? I think it's a good this one, but it needs, again, a way to look at it. If we need to have more research about it, so that now it should be recommended as one of the solutions for the plastic pollution, is also as an economic way of getting the bricks, if it is more economical.
According to the United Nations Environment Program, South Sudan is among the five most climate-vulnerable countries in the world. John Chual, Jonglei State's Minister for Agriculture, Environment and Forestry, says nonprofits fighting pollution should contact state authorities for additional financial support.
In any initiative, when you want to conduct the initiative like this, so you need also to let the authority of the state know. You know that also doing the part. But with coming up with that initiative, it is good, because all in all, we want to clean the town, we want to benefit the town in any cases.
UNEP says more than 200 million people depend on the River Nile as major source of livelihood, adding that poor waste management threatens the ecosystem, human health, and economic progress across South Sudan and other countries along the River Nile. For VOA News, I am Amara Bramcourt, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
The United States today sanctioned a senior leader of the Rapid Support Forces, Hamdan Daglo Moussaf, for his alleged involvement in RSF efforts to procure weapons and other military material that have enabled the RSF's operations in Sudan, including its assault on El Fasher, the capital of North Darfur. The U.S. Treasury says Daglo's actions have fueled the war, as well as brutal RSF atrocities against civilians, which allegedly include war crimes, crimes against humanity, and ethnic cleansing. The statement from the Treasury said, quote, rather than heed warnings from the United States and other partners, the RSF and its allied militia have continued to commit atrocities, including those involving sexual violence and ethnically targeted attacks on non-Arab groups. The war between the Sudanese armed forces and the RSF has caused immense devastation, with tens of thousands of dead and more than 11 million total displaced, both internally and externally. The Sudanese people demand and deserve peace and justice. justice and a return to civilian government, said the U.S. government. The statement went on to say today's actions are part of continued efforts to promote accountability for those responsible for fueling the conflict. The Biden administration says it will continue to use the tools at its disposal to support a peace process and impose a cost on those perpetuating the conflict. A short time ago, the White House said U.S. President Joe Biden is postponing his planned trip to Germany and Angola this week to work on preparations for Hurricane Milton in the southern state of Florida and relief efforts after Hurricane Helene. He was scheduled to go to Germany on Thursday and then arrive in Angola on Sunday. Hurricane Milton is expected to hit Florida tomorrow. Hurricane Helene devastated large parts of the southern United States almost 2 weeks ago. Biden's visit to Angola would have been his only trip to the African continent as president, although he had promised during a summit of African leaders in Washington in 2022 that he'd visit Africa the following year. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, an international court order has repercussions for South Africa's relations with Israel. Find out more when we come back.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In January, the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, ordered Israel to prevent acts that violate international laws against genocide in its assault against Hamas militants. In its initial ruling in a case South Africa filed, the ICJ ordered Israel to take measures to prevent harming civilians, but did not order it to suspend fighting. Darren Taylor reports the case has had a significant impact on South Africa's relations with Israel and Arab states.
During the International Court of Justice hearing in January, the South African legal team described Israel as an apartheid state that should end a near 60-year occupation and blockade of Gaza. It accused Israel of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza and asked the court to order Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's administration to withdraw its military from the territory. Israel's lawyers called South Africa's charge baseless, accusing President Cyril Ramaphosa's government of functioning as the legal arm of Hamas. Israel says it's defending itself against Hamas terrorists who attacked on October 7 last year, killing about 1,200 people and taking more than 250 hostage. On Monday, Sheikh Riyad Fattah of South Africa's Muslim Judicial Council addressed thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters in Cape Town.
We stand here. We stand in support of Hamas.
Allahu Akbar!
We stand here. We stand in support of Palestine.
Allahu Akbar!
The West has come together. America, they support the illegitimate state, the Zionist state of Israel.
Wits University international relations expert Professor John Stremlau was an American diplomat in the Middle East in the 1970s and 1980s.
Well, I applaud South Africa's attention and reminders of the plight of the Palestinians, because the Palestinian state is the critical element in this equation, which could ignite a peace process, But I don't see, frankly, Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, relenting at all. He has been opposed to that forever.
Stremlau says Israel's attacks in Gaza, which have claimed more than 40,000 lives, as well as South Africa's ICJ court case, have destroyed what was Pretoria's already strained relationship with Tel Aviv. The Israeli and South African governments are no longer communicating. South Africa closed its embassy in Tel Aviv and Israel recalled its ambassador. Stremlau says the aftermath of the October 7 attacks served to move the Ramaphosa administration closer to almost all of Israel's enemies in the Middle East, especially Iran. An Iranian diplomat in Pretoria, Mostafa Daryabari, says his country moved closer to South Africa because of Israel's assault on Gaza.
More ties to government happen. So menacing cultural, financial, industry, different things, and one of them is oil. Regarding the oil, we have lots of ties, contracts, and when people don't know each other, we say that they are the enemy of what they don't know. So for two nations, it's very important for us to start their cultural communication, to know each other more, to know their...
Iran this year became a member of the BRICS group, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And South Africa now has closer relationships with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Several countries have backed South Africa's ICJ case, including Egypt and Mexico. In its provisional ruling in January, the ICJ ordered Israel to act to prevent harming civilians and acts that could be genocide. The court, however, did not order a ceasefire in Gaza. It could be years before the ICJ issues a final ruling. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Israel's air attacks across Lebanon targeting the militant group Hezbollah continue today, and the Israeli military said it sent more troops into the country as the widening conflict in the Middle East has entered its second year with no end in sight. UNICEF says nearly 700 children have been injured in Lebanon since the Israeli airstrikes began a couple of weeks ago, and that mass displacement continues. The UN Children's Agency is calling on all sides in the conflict to stop the airstrikes and consider the innocent children whose lives are at stake, many of whom have been maimed or killed in the airstrikes. UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram in Beirut recently described conditions there to me.
The conditions here in Lebanon are really tough for families. The airstrikes continue. Every night you hear some volume, some scale of explosions. But of course, it's not limited to the capital city. It is happening right across the country, including and especially in the south of Lebanon. The airstrikes have damaged people's homes and forced many people on the move. That, according to the government of Lebanon, over 1 million people are now displaced across Lebanon. And we estimate that at least 300,000 of those are children.
Where are they going?
People are being forced to flee their communities. Most of the people I met have left either South Lebanon or the southern suburbs of Beirut, and they're traveling north, either from southern Lebanon up to Beirut or further north into the mountains in the north of the country. And the response is having to scale up rapidly to find places for these people to go. And so many public schools are being turned into shelters. There are now over 900 shelters across Lebanon, a dramatic increase from just a few days ago when that number was close to 200. And over 600 of those 900 shelters are at capacity. So that just gives you a sense of how quickly they're filling up with people. The families that I met at these shelters seem to have almost nothing. I met people who told me that they left with only the clothes on their back, and one mum said to me, the lucky people are the ones that have a change of clothes.
You talk about these shelters that have been set up all over Beirut and all over the place. Are they safe from airstrikes?
They should be protected under international law, that because they're civilian objects, schools, and that they're housing civilians, that these should be safe places for people. But as we've seen in other conflicts around the world, this isn't always respected. So we are urging the parties to the conflict to protect civilians, including the places where they're sheltering.
Are you worried? Are you scared being there in Beirut?
I am confident in the systems that look after us with the United Nations here in Lebanon. I think that I would be frightened if I was a child, and I met many children this week who are terrified.
Tell me about that. Can you talk to me about some of those children that you met?
I met a girl called Ghazal, who's 9, and she told me that she and her family were leaving the south of Lebanon to come to Beirut, and they were driving up the highway, and an airstrike hit a car right next to them on the highway, and not only damaging that car, but also the car that Ghazal was in. Glass went everywhere from the windows, and it was so damaged that the family couldn't drive the car. They didn't have money to get a taxi, and so they had to walk the rest of the way. And so that in itself was traumatic for this little girl. But then as we were talking and playing in this shelter, we had a balloon, and the balloon popped, and I was shocked at the reaction that Ghazal had. She jumped in the air, and she said she thought it reminded her of the car being hit on the highway next to her. And other children around jump too. So it's one example of how children are being traumatized by these airstrikes. And so many children yesterday told me about that.
What is UNICEF doing in Beirut right now to try to help children and other people?
Two key things are happening in the UNICEF response at the moment. Firstly, supplies. People are leaving with only really the clothes on their back. So we're going to shelters to help turn the schools into places that people can live. So we're bringing mattresses and blankets and water and kitchen supplies. We're also providing medical supplies to hospitals. We've already brought in 100 metric tons.
That is UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram. She was speaking to me from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Statistics show over 2.4 million African immigrants are living in the U.S. as part of a growing diaspora. This diverse community is becoming a critical constituency in American elections. Chukwu Nunso Vincent Iwanoge chairs the Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs and the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County. He describes to VOA's Yeheyes Wuhib the intersection of remittances and refugees in American politics.
Africans diaspora that have left the continent and in search of better life, not just in the continental USA, but also in Europe, Asia, and South America. These some of our people, Africans, moved to find better lives outside of the continent because of certain issues. Some are political and some are economic. But when they left the continent in search of a better life, so what happens is that they establish new homes in these places, give birth, get married, and start working. But because of the way we're structured as a communal people, we have families back home that we do not forget. And because governments are not really built on social welfare, the Africans that are in diaspora become that source of survival for their families back home. When they work 1, 2, 3 jobs, some monies are dedicated to their families where they live overseas, but some of that other monies are repatriated to the families back home. And those repatriations actually become part of the GDP of most of African countries.
So, Vincent, they help their people, their relatives back home. Talk to me about the African diaspora stepping out of the shadows and stakes a claim here in the United States. When does that transformation come?
So that transformation is an ongoing work that we're part of what we are doing. Most of the people in diaspora, when they get to America, they are still transient in their thinking. What I mean by that is that we still believe that America is not home, and we just come here and make it, set up some things back home and move back home. I mean, 90% of the time, or actually I'll say 98% of the time, that does not happen, because people go back and come right back. So one of the things we started doing, both on the board and the commission, is to remind ourselves, myself included, that I here are also U.S. citizens. The only thing that most of the African immigrants cannot do is run for president, but you can run for different positions. You can work in government. And because of the, I say PTSD, and from back home, which is the fact that most of the African countries where we come from, government does not really do anything for the citizens. People do not believe in government. So that becomes a transferred baggage when we get here. We do not participate in the political discourse, and we only do that maybe during presidential elections when we are excited. So part of what we have started doing as part of our work is to let our people know, listen, if you're not at a table, and then you're part of the menu. So get involved. The more we work together, the more we can achieve. And we've had some results here in the state of Maryland. Here in Prince George's County, which is my home county, through the intervention and support of the county executive, Angela Olsebrooks, we have three first-generation African daughters of immigrants that have won, contested in the council elections here, and have won. One of them is Council Member Juanita Fisher. She has a Nigerian and a South African heritage. We also have Council Member Wala Blige, has a Liberian and a Nigerian heritage. And also Council Member Crystal Oriada, Kenya and the U.S. So having people of African descent getting elected has made our people believe, and some of them are starting to come out of the shadows to say, wow, this is possible. Oh, our kids can also run and win, and also can be appointed to different political offices. And we've had several appointments also by Governor Wes Moore, and one of his deputy chief of staff is as a Ghanaian heritage. So these appointments and elections and I'm making our people believe, and some of them are coming out of their shadows now to participate.
That is Chukwunanso Vincent Iwagone, chairman of the Maryland Governor's Commission on African Affairs and chair of the African Diaspora Advisory Board for Prince George's County. He was speaking with my colleague Yehias Wuhib here in Washington.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That wraps it up for us this Tuesday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, don't worry, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Belidia by Mawa.
Tata beleta nina de bijilu nina hulu lakile fenastani lisa giseregu lakile fenastani lisa ginyakamu lakile fenastani lisa gikatulu lakile fenastani lisa ma
We've been listening to Belidi by Mawa. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Cornelius Tenor, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Egypt, Shilu Halai, Uchad, Deru Darfur, Ugongo, Deru Bazi, Uganda, Shilu Arua, Ukenya, Shilu Nadapal, Ubagi Alfadulude, Ae, Barakesimu, Uyala, Tibu Sudan, Deru Shilu Abye. Katulu jenataki.